Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. I'm glad to be back with you. Glad to have everyone back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, because who needs any of that? We certainly don't. Sorry I wasn't with you last week. I've been sick, and I'm still actually a little sick, but I'm not so sick that I can't do the show. So we're going to do the show, even though I'm probably not on my game 100%, because I'm still kind of sick. But there's a lot of important things happening that I know you people need to know about. And so I'm glad to be here with my extremely attractive audio engineer. Oh, no. Who's getting sick now? Oh, no. Yeah, it's going to rip, shred through the McBurney compound. Slowly but surely take each one of us out. All right. Let's see here. Now, I've been gone for a couple weeks. And I've been out there, and I've been out and about, as I often am. And I have to ask, has Thanksgiving officially been expunged from the calendar? Is that, we don't even talk about Thanksgiving anymore? I mean, I see people putting up Christmas decorations in all the stores. It used to be the custom that you didn't put up the Christmas decorations until after Thanksgiving. But now, Christmas is in, and maybe the name of the holidays was changed and I didn't get the memo. It seems like the name of the holiday has been changed to Black Friday. And I just didn't get the memo. I'm not sure when that happened. And I'm not very happy about it. Thank you very much. Thanksgiving being my personal favorite holiday of holidays, if one has to have a favorite. And I'm not sure one has to. And I'm not so sure I even have a favorite. I just like it a lot. And it seems like it's disappeared. And that's sad. That's sad. All right. So if someone out there can send me the memo that I missed, maybe I can understand what's going on out there. All right. Now, meanwhile, let's go to do a little globe trotting. Some news from the international, from around the world, I should say. From the international community, I think they call it. We've got students in England. Fewer than half of the students in England, according to a recent poll, support the concept of freedom of speech. That's right. This is according to a report by a think tank called Policy Exchange. And so there you have it. That's, what more can you say? More than half the students in Britain say free speech is all right. So much for England. But like, we didn't see that coming. We kind of all knew that England circled the drain quite some time ago. And now they just continue on the path. And let's go to the war file, where apparently the Mexican drug cartels, well, they're no longer just drug cartels. Listen to this. Well, you remember we reported just a few weeks ago how a Mexican drug gang basically defeated the Mexican army in combat, basically, in the middle of the street in broad daylight. Well, now, according to MSN, more than a dozen criminal groups are battling for control of the avocado trade in and around the city of Uruapan in Mexico. That's right, the avocado trade. In fact, I've got a quote from Jose Maria Ayala Montero. He works for a trade association. He says the threat is constant and from all sides. That's right, avocado farmers. So avocado farmers seized control of a avocado forest back in March. And these criminal gangs announced a new tax on residents who owned avocado trees, charging $250 a hectare for protection to make sure that their avocado groves didn't suddenly burn down. And as all this is going on with the avocado wars, homicides are at an all-time high in Mexico, but much of the killing today has little to do with drugs. That's right. Criminals Now battle for access to gasoline pipelines, which they tap to steal gas and sell it. Cartels control access to gold mines and even manipulates the price of goods in supermarkets and takes a skim. The local Coca-Cola bottler closed its distribution center last year over extortion threats. The Pepsi bottler left a few months later. This is in Guanajuato State, where the avocado groves are. That this is all happening. Mexico City, upscale bar owners have to pay taxes to the local gangs. And on Mexico's highways, cargo robberies have risen more than 75% since 2016. And while all this criminal activity was going on, while the drug trade was growing in Mexico in the late 80s, 90s, early 2000s, while the drug trade was booming, another important change was happening. In America, Americans were falling in love with avocados. Not just cocaine, but avocados. Yeah. Between 2001 and 2018, average annual U.S. consumption of avocados increased from 2 pounds per person to over 7 pounds per person. I never ate avocados before. Let's see. Probably the 90s at some point. I never ate them growing up. I didn't even know what they were. I fell in love with them too. I'm part of this group. We've fueled the avocado trade, apparently. So exports of avocados are booming, a $2.4 billion industry last year in Guanajuato State there in Mexico. And an increasing number of criminal groups all want a piece of the action. Yes, after gangsters burned down two major packing plants and started kidnapping people, producers in the municipality of Tancitaro, a major avocado hub, they rose up. The people rose up. They armed their own civilian police force, built guard towers at the entrances to every town, and orchestrated a takeover of the municipal government by making sure that there only one mayoral candidate was on the ballot, and it was their candidate. So they basically kicked out the governing officials who couldn't control the criminal gangs, and basically formed their own state, out of necessity, out of fear for their lives. Anyway, anyone who argues that we shouldn't have a secure border on the southern border is out of their mind, because Mexico is collapsing into chaos, and it's like Mad Max down there, for crying out loud, over avocados. Well, maybe we should just get our avocados from California, where we used to get them, before the liberals all went insane out there and drove the avocado farmers out of business. Now we have to rely on Mexico for our avocados. All right. Anyway, we go now. Let's see. This is the Dim New World file. We're going to India, where we're going to catalog yet another event in the anti-natalist movement. You've heard of this, right? Yeah. This 27-year-old Indian man named Raphael Samuel, he's going to sue his parents for giving birth to him, because he says it was not our decision to be born. Oh, great. He uses a collective pronoun. All right. He says human existence is totally pointless. He believes it's wrong to bring new people into the world without their consent. Okay, that's a tricky one to pull off. He subscribes to a philosophy called antinatalism. The basic tenet of antinatalism is that life, even under the best of circumstances, is not a gift or a miracle, but rather a harm and an imposition. And the question of whether to have a child, and when it comes to the question of whether to have a child, the correct answer is always no. That's the antinatalist as defined by one creepy little homo, it looks like, over in India. It wasn't our decision to be born. All right. Anyway, this article from The Guardian, rag over out of Britain, says, having children may be a bad idea. The idea that having children may be a bad idea seems to be gaining mainstream popularity. Really? Just because a pile of homos at the Guardian say that it seems to be gaining mainstream popularity? This isn't mainstream. This is insanity. This is crack pottery is what it is. It's not gaining any mainstream popularity.
Maybe it is in India if they do that.
Maybe. Yes. Yeah, maybe because of the caste system in India. And if you're a homo and you're kind of a creepy weirdo who calls yourself our, I mean, but that's not mainstream. But hey, I'm reporting on it. So I have a concern that it could gain mainstream popularity. And I think it is kind of by accident in most European countries and Asia. People just aren't having kids anymore. They may not call themselves antinatalists, but they're voting with their feet, so to speak. Anyways, what the antinatalists also believe that procreation has always been and always will be wrong because of life's inevitable suffering. So because there's suffering, there's bound to be suffering, then procreation has always been and always will be wrong. Okay. So that, boy, what a bleak outlook on life, huh? This guy must be real fun at parties. Be a blast. He should try stand-up comedy. I guess South African philosopher David Benatar published a book that is widely credited with introducing the term antinatalism. The title of the book, Better Never to Have Been, The Harm of Coming into Existence. Oh, man, that must have been flying off the shelves. Anyway, Benatar goes on to say a bunch of blather about whatever he talked about. I'd care less. Anyway, this is not all that new. In the 18th century, Thomas Malthus sounded the alarm that the population would outstrip the food supply. Remember the Malthusians? Yeah. And then in 1968, Stanford biologist Paul Ehrlich published The Population Bomb, arguing that growth in global population would lead to famines and ecological crises. Yeah, but he said it would happen in the 1980s, which is like 30 years ago now. But the geniuses at The Guardian don't mention that both Malthus and Ehrlich were both thoroughly discredited as crackpots. Antinatalism seems to be gaining mainstream popularity. All right. Well, not around here. You can tell your story walking. I can't believe I did a story from The Guardian. I hate The Guardian so much that if I find a story that's linked to The Guardian, unless it's like this one where it just slipped past me, I try to find the same story on any other media source just so I don't quote The Guardian. Really dislike them. Bunch of leftist fascists. All right, so are we coming back to America yet? No, we have to stop off in Iran first. One more stop in Iran because there is a crisis happening in Iran. You may or may not be paying attention to it. It's hard to know what's happening in Iran because all anyone can talk about is the impeachment, which I will talk about later, maybe a little. The CNBC reporter calls this the most critical situation since the Iranian Revolution of 1979. Yes, and it's prompted by America's maximum pressure campaign of sanctions against Iran, forcing Iran into what CNBC describes as a dangerously declining economy. And then there's the cumulative effect of Tehran's domestic malfeasance and regional overstretch. It's the perfect storm. This is the time. There's growing protests in Iran, Iraq, and Lebanon that CNBC says has charged the atmosphere with urgency. This is similar to what happened at the dawn of the Barack Obama era in 2009 when the so-called Arab Spring was occurring. And instead of using it to topple the dictators and the mad mullahs in Iran, Barack Obama, for some reason, used it to destroy the Middle East. And let's hope that the governing officials, including President Trump, decide to do it differently this time. come back. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Stephen, for getting me through that. Folks, I may not make it through this show. This may be the first show that I have to call because I can't stop coughing. I keep hitting the cough button, which you don't hear that because of the magic of modern technology, but I'm having a hard time. So, but bear with me because I do want to report on this next story, probably the most significant story of the past couple of weeks. This finds its way to us from our Mark of the Beast file, where Chick-fil-A has announced that it will no longer donate to the Salvation Army, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and the Paul Anderson Youth Home. Yes, Chick-fil-A says that they'll no longer donate to these because these charities allegedly have anti-LGBTQ, LSMFT, all of that because of the homos. Just unbelievable. So sad. Only McDonald's and Starbucks bring in more revenue among fast food chains than Chick-fil-A. They're number three. I did not know that. I thought it was Burger King, but no, Chick-fil-A. McDonald's number one, Starbucks number three, Chick-fil-A. They donate about $32 million in cash gifts a year. $32 million. So that's a significant amount of money. But now none of that money is going to go to the Salvation Army or the Fellowship of Christian Athletes or the Paul Anderson Youth Home. And the move comes, by the way, this is from biznow.com, business website. The move comes after several U.S. airports rejected the company from concessions deals earlier this year, citing their love for the homos. The airports. So airports are more interested in advocating for sexual immorality than giving people options for some decent food at the airport. Let's see. In Boston, the late mayor, Thomas Menino, pledged to ban Chick-fil-A from opening within the city limits of the city of Boston. And then Mayor Thomas Menino was dispatched immediately to Judgment Day. How about that for irony? How's it going, Tom? How you doing up there, Tommy boy? Oh, down there, Tommy boy. Starting next year, the Chick-fil-A Foundation, let's see, plans to give $9 million to organizations like Junior Achievement and Covenant House International to fight homelessness and community food banks for hunger initiatives in every city where it operates. So they're basically going to stop giving the money to the Christians and they're going to start giving it to the socialists. And why are they doing it? They're doing it for money. That's why. They want to be able to buy or sell. And it's been established that eventually no one will be able to buy or sell unless they take the mark, which is, if you've heard my theory on this, it's not an actual mark. It's not a computer chip. It's not an algorithm. It's not a website. It's not AI. It's the way you think and what you do is the mark, is what it is. And if you don't bow the knee and take the mark, you can't open a franchise, a chicken franchise in Boston. Me personally, I just wouldn't do it. I'd be like, all right, Tom, how about this? Go to hell. We'll go to another city while you go to hell. How about that? I would give up the business. I'm wondering if there's been a change in management at Chick-fil-A. Because Chick-fil-A was long known as staunchly conservative and not just willing to donate to charities that were obviously Christian, but to actually mention the name of Jesus Christ in public and to be public about their support for things like a biblical marriage, which you could just call marriage, but you can't do that anymore. You have to define it now. All right. Now, of course, you know that you would expect that as soon as Chick-fil-A made the announcement that the homos would announce how much they love Chick-fil-A now. Well, Glad responded to Chick-fil-A's decision to stop donating to Salvation Army and other Christian charities with a statement from Drew Anderson, GLAAD's Director of Campaigns and Rapid Response. And what did Drew have to say? He said, further transparency is needed. Their deep ties to organizations which exist purely to harm LGBTQ people and families makes me very suspicious. If Chick-fil-A is serious about their pledge, they'll stop holding hands with divisive anti-LGBTQ activists! All right. So it turns out GLAAD founder, or founder, whatever he is, the Secretary of Rapid Response. I don't even know what that's all about. He's not falling in love with Chick-fil-A. Huh. Let's see here. Chick-fil-A, let's see, what's his, oh. Go on, more from the homo. In addition to refraining from financially supporting anti-LGBT organizations, Chick-fil-A still lacks policies to ensure safe workplaces for LGBTQ employees, and should unequivocally speak out against the anti-LGBTQ reputation that their brand represents. Kind of let the air out of the whole Chick-fil-A bow thing, right? That really didn't work. They're not happy at all. Now, the Salvation Army, on the other hand, they say that it serves more than 23 million individuals a year, including those in the queer community. Oh, great. So now we got the Salvation Army bowing. Salvation Army, not to be outdone by Chick-fil-A, wants to bow down before the homos. Says it serves people in the queer community. That's just wonderful. Now, the Salvation Army says, in front of God and everybody, that we believe we're the largest provider of poverty relief to the LGBTQ plus community. Population. They even put the plus on there. Well, this is a sad day. They say, we serve those in need regardless of sexual orientation, gender identity, religion, or any other factor. You could be a mad dog killer. And if you need a bowl of soup, the Salvation Army. All right, this is just so sad. Let's see. The Babylon Bee mocked Chick-fil-A's decision. Did they mock Chick-fil-A or did they mock the Salvation Army? Anyway, here's the story from the Babylon Bee. Chick-fil-A has sacrificed its Christian fans in favor of an outraged mob that will stop at nothing to destroy them. that's a parody article. Yeah. Let's see here. Christian fans have been great, but it's boring just having loyal fans who support you through thick and thin. The CEO says he'd much rather have fans who stage die-ins and cancel you when you don't cave in. All right, I like those guys at the Babylon Bee. That's pretty funny. And to the point, by the way. All right, now, before I talk about the Pope from the Bad Pope File, which that seems like the Pope file's only been a bad Pope file. We used to have some good Pope, bad Pope news, but it's almost all bad news now. But before I get to any talk of the Pope, where am I at here? Okay, so I want to talk about impeachment, the impeachment proceedings, or whatever you want to call it. It's a distraction from reality, and I choose not to participate. So let's move on to Tesla's hideous truck with the broken window, which is far more interesting than anything that came out of Adam Schiff's mouth this past week, or anyone else associated with that fiasco. It was particularly satisfying to watch, what's the guy's name who owns Tesla? Elon Musk, embarrass himself with that horribly hideous, what was that truck? Was that one of the rejected DeLorean prototypes? That it's just looked hideous, horrible, the worst looking thing I've ever seen as far as a vehicle. And then when he went to throw the ball bearing at the bulletproof glass, that was hilarious. I almost fell off my chair and wet myself. I laughed so hard. So anyway, I'm not a fan of Mr. Musk And I'm not generally not a fan of his cars. I rode in a Tesla for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and I will tell you that I can see that how it would impress a very young person who hasn't experienced much of anything in life. But it's over-engineered. It's got way too much plastic and sharp edges, and the back seat is you almost always hit your arm on the back seat getting out because it's got this trying to look too cool. So it's got this extra little. Anyway, I've been in some nice cars. I've been in some Porsches. I've been in some Bentleys. I've been in some Rolls Royces. And I've been in some cars that are priced right around a Tesla that are way more impressive than a Tesla. And that's on top of, number one, it's just not that impressive of a car. And number two, if you plug your Tesla in all night long, it will charge for 250 miles of driving, about 8 hours overnight in your garage. Now, what happens if you have to go 500 miles? Well, then you have to stop in the middle, and you have to charge it again for another 8 hours. So that seems like a hassle. Oh, they got some high-powered charging stations that you can charge it in like 2 hours. So you only have to stop for 2 hours to charge your... Anyway, my Camry... by the way, the Tesla felt like, to me, it felt like a really cheap version of an older Corolla. You know, the low end, the SE one. Not the XLE, not the higher end, but the lowest end Toyota Corolla, to me, is comparable to a Tesla. But my Camry XLE with leather seats... I was able to fill my Camry for a 500-mile trip in about 3 minutes. So, Elon, when you figure all that out, and then when you hire some adults to design your cars, then you can give me a call. Until then, color me unimpressed. All right, so there, I've ripped on Tesla for... I talked about Thanksgiving. All I'm going to say about impeachment has been said already on this show. And, I think we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll start with either Ruth Bader Ginsburg or the bad Pope. We have to come back before the guitar solo's over because, well, we just have to come back. That's why. But that was a good one. All right. That was, by the way, that was a tongue-in-cheek delivery there with an ironic twist at that whole song. But anyway, they did a lot of that. Do I want to do the Pope? You know what? Before I get to the Pope, let me get to something good that I saw. Now you get all depressed over... Talk about the Pope. You talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You get depressed. I saw a Denver Bronco by accident on television. His name is Justin Simmons, and I don't know what position he plays, but I know that he plays football for the Denver Broncos. And he was talking for whatever reason, and he had a bandana on his head, and it said blessed. And then it had all kinds of little Bible verses around it. And I thought it was really interesting that he had it on backwards and inside out. So you had to be on your toes to recognize what was going on with that bandana. I had to rewind a couple of times. So you had to be on your toes to catch it, but I caught it. And I Googled the guy because I don't know who anyone on the Broncos is anymore because I don't pay attention. They're dead to me. And turns out he's a Christian kid. He just had a baby. Seems like a decent guy. And I saw a picture of him with the same bandana on, but it was on right side up and not backwards or upside down. It was normal, okay? It was easy to read. But that was like a two months ago picture. But the picture that I saw on the TV last night, it was upside down and backwards and inside out. He was hiding that thing every way he could. So anyway, I just have a question for Broncos management. Did you ask him not to wear it? And then did he wear it backwards and upside down and get away with it? Because most of the people in the Broncos organization read at a sixth grade level, and he would be able to pull that off fairly easily. I don't know. Did he have to go underground with the Christian bandana with the Psalms? And I don't know. Anyway, don't like the Denver Broncos, but I do like this guy, Justin Simmons. He seems all right to me. I wish he were playing on a less evil, horrible, hideous, monstrous team. But unfortunately, there's only one other, I think, and that's the Dallas Cowboys. And hopefully he doesn't end up with the Dallas Cowboys. Hopefully he'll find his way onto a better team. No, actually, the Broncos are worse than the Dallas Cowboys. Are the Broncos worse than the New England Patriots? I don't think that's possible. But the Broncos could give him a run for the money, especially if they ask this kid, don't be wearing that Christian bandana when you're speaking in your Denver Broncos uniform. Which I just have a sneaking suspicion that happened, only because I hate the Denver Broncos, and so I always think the worst of them. But I do like Justin Simmons. So now there, that was something positive, right? That I managed to turn negative because I don't know, that's my style, I guess. The Pope from the Bad Pope File, Pope Francis has said that politicians who rage against homos remind him of Adolf Hitler. Okay.
Who's against the homo? What politician?
I can't think of a politician that rages against. Apparently, there are a couple in like Eastern Europe.
Oh.
There's some Russians. And, yeah, some Poles. Oh, yeah, Russia. They haven't all turned queer. Okay. Yeah. He says the persecution. Now, listen to how he puts this. This really upsets me when I hear this. The Pope says, with the persecution of Jews, gypsies, and people with homosexual tendencies, what was done in those days is happening again today. All right. In recent weeks, Pope Francis has also denounced a resurgence of anti-Semitism in Europe. So he's lumping the Jews in with the queers. Mm-hmm. And even the gypsies don't want to be lumped in with the queers. Anyway. You know, Ernst Röhm was one of the homos that Hitler executed after Hitler utilized him and his brown shirts to come to power. So Hitler didn't have any problem hanging out at gay bars and with homos. So your comparison fails, Mr. Pope. Bad Pope. All right, get him out of here. Speaking of get him out of here, what's the deal with Ruth Bader Ginsburg? I mean, she sent the entire leftist establishment into palpitations. I mean, there were probably people who actually had heart attacks when Ruth Bader Ginsburg went into the hospital at the beginning of the weekend. And now she's out. She got out of the hospital. She went into the hospital. She went in for pancreatic cancer, radiation, chemo. What was that, a year or two ago? Gets up and walks out.
She's the only one.
Man. Anyway, it's really proof that God is very merciful, giving her lots of time. So leftist hearts all skipped a beat, and I thought about something. After seeing what happened with the Brett Kavanaugh situation and how incensed the left became and the depths to which they were willing to go to stop Donald Trump from appointing anyone who they even perceived as anything having anything at all to do with anything conservative, I mean, they flipped out last time. Can you imagine when Ruth Bader Ginsburg finally buys the farm, what's going to happen on the left? And this is not hyperbole, and I'm not joking about this. I would not be surprised if some leftist actually tried to assassinate Donald Trump or his nominee. I would not be surprised. And it's not a joke. If I was Donald Trump, I would beef up my my Secret Service detail if Ruth Bader Ginsburg assumes room temperature, because the left are going to lose their collective minds. They're going to go ballistic. So, and not in a funny way. No, no, scary way. You know, like the left has done over the past several hundred years, butchering millions, then tens of millions, then hundreds of millions of people. Yeah. All right. Meanwhile, over in California, I think there was a civil case filed. The Center, Planned Parenthood filed litigation against the Center for Medical Progress. Remember that? Those were the journalists who exposed Planned Parenthood was trafficking in body parts. You remember all the videos that shocked everyone? Well, in the civil case, the jury has found in favor of Planned Parenthood and against Dalyden and the Center for Medical Progress, and the jury awarded, was it a jury? Yes, the jury. The jury awarded punitive damages to Planned Parenthood of over $2 million. That's according to the lawyers at the Thomas More Society, who represented David Dalyden, who headed the CMP project. So the jury saw, and this is what is infuriating about this story. Prior to the start of the trial, this is a civil trial. Prior to the start of the trial, the judge ruled that the jury would not be allowed to consider any information Dalyden gleaned from the video recordings. So Planned Parenthood's assertion was that these videos harm them. And the judge said the one thing that will not be allowed to be talked about or viewed in this trial are the videos. Get that? Wow. The jury also found that the defendants were in violation of the Federal Racketeering, Influence, and Corrupt Organizations Act. So they said they were RICO. They were guilty under RICO statutes. That's how you get, like, mobsters, right? And drug kingpins. Wow. Let's see. Let's see. Oh, the judge, by the way, is a guy named Judge William Arick. Yeah, he's an emeritus member of the board of the Good Samaritan Family Resource Center, which makes him sound like a really nice guy, right? It's an entity in partnership with a Planned Parenthood affiliate and a member of the National Abortion Federation. So the judge sits on the board of an activist abortion child-killing organization. And he basically just shafted these heroic journalists. Frankly, they were heroic. And you can say heroic because they may not have known that they could be on the hook for $2 million. They may not have known that they could lose everything. But quite often when you stand up and you speak truth to power, especially an organization as powerful as Planned Parenthood, who even has their own judges, you could lose everything. And so I'm sure that Thomas More Society will appeal, and Dalyden won't have to come up with $2.2 million immediately. But can you imagine how scary it must be to be a young guy who you just want to go out and do something good, and now you're on the hook for $2 million that you don't have? It's pretty scary. By the way, the judge, one more note on the judge. The judge's wife has a Facebook account. And it was found to have included posted public comments along with a photo of her and her husband that indicate support for Planned Parenthood and criticism of Dalyden and CMP. Finally, Breitbart reports that Planned Parenthood has yet to be prosecuted for any of the allegations of profiting from the sales of body parts of babies aborted at its clinics. So, you remember when the story first broke, all the Republicans in Congress are going to hold hearings and we're going to find out what's going on here. Nothing happened except that the people who exposed the truth about child killing and then chopping babies up and selling their body parts, they ended up losing in court. So I wonder if the Republican Congress or any Republican anywhere will do anything about this or even mention this. Horrible. All right. Now let's go to San Francisco. Should we go to San Francisco? Could it get any worse than that? Well, listen to this. Voters in San Francisco have elected the son of two former Weather Underground murderers as district attorney. Chesa Boudin, or Boudin, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, wants to free criminals and prosecute police and ICE agents. And he won an election in San Francisco. And you may not remember Kathy Boudin and David Gilbert. They murdered two police officers and a security guard during a 1981 robbery of a Brinks car outside New York City. Boudin's dad is still in prison, but his murderous wife, she got out, and she's an assistant professor at Columbia University. You can't make this stuff up. This is insanity, right? So what's this fella's name? Chesa Boudin, or Boudin? I should look that up. After Chesa Boudin's parents were killed, I'm sorry, after they killed the cops and ended up in jail, Boudin was sent to live with Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. Now, Ayers, you remember, he bombed the Pentagon and the U.S. Capitol and the New York City Police Department. And him and Dorn, you remember, they went into hiding. They eventually came out of hiding. Why? Because they became university professors. That's why. So Boudin's been very open about what he is. A mad dog leftist frothing at the mouth who wants to arrest police and free criminals. And in San Francisco, that has some currency, apparently, enough to get him elected. He wants to stop prosecuting gang members. He believes the criminal justice system is racist. And he thinks every illegal alien is the victim of a crime committed by ICE and President Trump. And he thinks every immigrant should get a visa. He also wants to advocate for anyone on behalf of anyone in the United States facing deportation, even if they were cop killers. Like his mom and dad. You can understand why he might have a soft spot in his heart for cop killers, because some of his earliest memories of mom and dad were their conversation about the cops they killed. And now this is the fruit of that. And the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, they say, right? So Chesa Boudin is, he could get more people killed than his mom and dad did. Come back in the midst of the dueling guitars. Here, oh, he's going, no, come, bring him up, bring him up. He's coming up. See who wins. Oh, I think it was a tie. Can't call that one. All right. Let's go. Oh, well, I got more from Chesa Boudin in San Francisco. Just in case you were thinking of moving there or visiting there. San Francisco's newly elected district attorney has promised. He's made one essential promise to the voters of San Francisco, and this is probably what pushed him over the edge to victory. He has promised not to prosecute public urination, which, as you know, that is a sacred right in San Francisco. Chesa Boudin said such crimes should not be prosecuted. He says, we will not prosecute crimes involving quality of life crimes, such as public camping, offering or soliciting sex, public urination, blocking a sidewalk, etc. They should not and will not be prosecuted. All right. He's upset. He says many of these crimes are still being prosecuted, and we have a long way to go to decriminalize poverty and homelessness. This guy's a madman. I'm serious. There are cities, municipalities, and in some states, the whole state are being governed by criminally insane people. And this guy is one of them. It's just unbelievable. The guy's... Okay, this proves that democracy, at some point, once the citizenry devolves to a certain level, somebody has to stand up and say, hey, we got to stop this. These people are going to elect themselves into their own death and destruction. Somebody's got to save these idiots from themselves. Or I guess you could be nice and just say they're just like sheep who have no shepherd. That'd be the nice way to say it. I say that they're criminally insane idiots. Now we go one more file from the Dim New World file. Speaking of the criminally insane, let's go to the governing officials in the city of Denver, Colorado, where Jawaid Bazyar, he's the CEO of a company in Colorado. It's got its offices in downtown Denver. And he says the area immediately around his office, he says, quote, is turning into a bathroom stall filled with crime, feces, and used syringes from drug addicts. That's a guy just trying to do business in downtown Denver. He says in downtown Denver, it's nonstop now, just piles of poop. That's what he's told Fox 31 TV. He said there's food, trash, drug deals. In the alley, we get the defecation and the drug needles. So, okay, so you can sense his frustration, right? Because he says he has to repeatedly call law enforcement, sometimes several times a day, to get some of the people off his business's property. And then he had the added insult of he and his staff at his business were having to clean the poop off the ground themselves. Because what are you going to do if you're trying to work somewhere? I mean, eventually you got to clean it off, right? So they were actually cleaning it off. Well, he decided to stop cleaning it. To stand up and make a statement to the criminally insane people running Denver who are allowing this to happen to him. So he said, I stopped. He said there were safety concerns. Some of that material is biohazard. No doubt, right? And he says, besides, I didn't hire my employees to clean poop off the ground. So I can't, as an employer, just say, hey, go clean up the feces to my professional staff. It doesn't look good. Anyway, so the Denver Public Health Department has issued multiple warnings to Bazyar that he needs to clean up the poop, and now they started fining him. They're fining the business owner. It's just unbelievable. Anyway, he says he's going to take the city of Denver to court. And I'm more power to him. That's awesome. If the city can't figure out a way to stop vagrants from defecating in front of businesses, it's time for the wholesale removal of all of those criminally insane people. And seriously, you could have a lottery in Denver and end up with a better city council, a better mayor, a better whatever they have there. You could fill every slot by just throwing a dart at a phone book, and you couldn't do worse than what you've got in there right now. So it's time. It's time for a reset before things get too crazy. All right, speaking of crazy, we go to the domestic tranquility file where authorities received a 911 call at about 7 o'clock in the morning from a home in the San Diego suburb of Paradise Hills. Officers made their way to the house to see what was happening when authorities got another 911 call on the way from a neighboring relative reporting that they heard arguing and what sounded like a gun firing, maybe a nail gun, maybe a real gun. Anyway, the cops got to the house in Paradise Hills and a mother, a father, and their four sons were found shot inside the Paradise Hills home, an apparent case of murder-suicide. Five of the family members died. Family members identified the parents as Jose Valdivia, and Sabrina Rosario, and their sons, Enzi, Zuriel, and Zeth. They all died at the hospital. And at last report, the fourth child, Ezekiel, was in critical condition at the hospital. It appears that the father shot his family before turning the gun on himself, killing himself. So another family detonation. These happen almost every day in every major metropolitan area in America, every day. So we usually report on one a week. We could report on this could be the whole show if we wanted to. It should shock you. And the fact that it doesn't shock you and it doesn't shock me anymore, it hurts to know that I have been desensitized to that level, that doesn't make me stop, drop everything, and just start weeping. Because that's what it should do. Oh. All right. So now I don't know. Now I don't know what I want to do. Don't want to do that. All right. I guess I'll just go in order of what I've got here. So we go from that, a family detonation that, I mean, it made the news in San Diego for probably the morning drive. And by the evening, it was gone. It was disappeared from the news, and all we heard about was testimony and bombshell witnesses and the impeachment inquiry. A total distraction from the existential collapse of Western civilization happening right in front of our eyes. And here's a fine example of this from the personhood file. We go down to Texas, where these idiots at the Star-Telegram in Fort Worth, these urinalists, I want to compare the cases of Tinsley Lewis and Rodney Reed. Yeah, they say at first glance, there's nothing strikingly similar about the cases of Tinsley Lewis and Rodney Reed. Lewis is a tiny infant born with a congenital heart defect and other devastating health problems. She's spent every moment of her short life hooked up to life-sustaining equipment in the intensive care unit at Cook's Children's Medical Center. Rodney Reed, who is Rodney Reed? He is an inmate on Texas death row, convicted of the 1996 murder of Stacy Stites. It's hard to imagine, says the urinalists at the Star-Telegram, that these individuals have anything in common. But they do. Their lives are in the hands of the state, and both are fighting the clock. So this urinalist is going to actually now compare the state of these two human beings. Anyway, I'll post a link to the article. You'll have to choke back a little puke to get through this story, I'm telling you. Anyway, apparently a bioethics committee at the hospital where Tinsley is has decided to unplug her. They decided last month that she's to be removed from the ventilator that keeps her alive. And her parents had nothing to do with it. No one had anything to do with it. There's this ethics board, a bioethics committee, which is kind of an ironic name for a board that votes to kill a little girl. They say she's incurable, and that means we should kill her. Okay, I disagree with that. I mean, if you want to look at the big picture, we're all incurable at some point, okay? And if the parents and the insurance company and they're all willing to keep this girl alive, they should be allowed to do that. There shouldn't be some committee outside of them that decides when it's time to give up on an incurable case. And I'm not going to argue with the fact that it's incurable. And I'm not even going to argue with the fact that at some point the parents could ethically decide that it's time to give up. But for a committee in the hospital to decide, I mean, that's just malevolent evil is what that is. Now that reminds me of Adolf Hitler. Forget the Polish guy ranting about the homos, Mr. Pope. What about this? Anyway, so the committee's decision, by the way, is binding and there are no appeals. But that turned out not to be true because the mother took him to court and she got a stay of execution of sorts until December 10th. And then they go on to compare it to this murderer. He's been on death row since 1998. And listen to what the I think this is the paper. This might be his lawyers. I'm sure it's both of them. They say potentially new information from witnesses. I'm sorry. Some potentially new information from witnesses have raised questions about his guilt. It's probably not enough to exonerate him, but it is enough to throw his conviction into doubt. And that's all. And so they would have let a murderer live. If you can just muddy the water just a little bit, right? Which I think this is the Innocence Project again, the Barry Shekin jive, I think. Anyway, more than 2 million people have signed a petition urging Governor Greg Abbott to spare the murderer. Give us Barabbas, they said. And now the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals has stopped his execution. I think it was supposed to be executed this week or last. But now they've stopped it, and they're going to let the Sheck and Jive go on. And meanwhile, for a journalist to write an article like this, it shows the depravity within the journalism community, just how evil they have become. Anyway, and I hope that the murderer is executed, because it would be a good message to go out to all of the aspiring thugs out there who aren't going to be prosecuted anymore for urinating in the street or dropping their needles in front of your business, or maybe even just defecating behind your business, or maybe right in front of it. All right. And so what has happened now with this decriminalization of crime is that the next generation coming up, they think that punishment is evil. Yeah. Uh-huh. Listen to this. At Brown University, students held a wine-in. I don't know what they do these days. They do die-ins. They do sit-ins. I think these days they do wine-ins, where they all get together and they whine. And at this one, it's called Prison Abolition 101, was the name of the workshop. And the subtitle is Discussing a World Where the Prison Industrial Complex Has Been Destroyed. Yes, yes. The end goal, says this group of Brown University, this is an Ivy League school, by the way, probably costs you $60,000 a year to defile your daughter by sending her there. They say the end goal is to not have prisons as any form of incarceration. And here's the thing, folks. You folks know how I feel about prisons. I don't believe there should be prisons either. But what I'm talking about and what these people are talking about are two completely different topics. Trust me. Because when I say there shouldn't be any prisons, well, I come back and I say, here's the reason why. Because imprisoning someone is an unbiblical and unjust form of punishment. That, also, by the way, also happens to be counterproductive towards criminal justice and preventing crime. And that we should have three forms of punishment for all crimes. Capital punishment, corporal punishment, and restitution. But there has to be some punishment. Two of the things I advocate actually have the word punishment right in their names. Corporal punishment, capital punishment, and restitution. But listen to what the girls at Brown say. Oh, did I say girls? They may not identify as girls at Brown anymore, and I apologize if I've offended any of them. Let's see what they say. Look, I used a collective pronoun, and appropriately, because this is a whole group of whining Ivy League girls, by the way, who have been abused by the generation that raised them. So the reason these children are so ignorant and evil and wicked is mostly because of the people who raised them. They raised them to be that way. So the girls, they say, we shouldn't have any prisons, there should be no incarceration, and then they say, punishment at any stage doesn't guarantee any kind of growth. And that's what, isn't that what it's about? Life is about, like, growing. Growth. Are we growing? I don't feel like we're growing. All right. Okay, so basically they don't want any punishment. They don't want any consequences. And what they don't understand is it doesn't matter what they want or what they don't want. There are inherent consequences and punishments built into the system already. And we should seek them out and find out God's opinion and go with that. Don't just tear down the prisons. All right. That's it, folks. I got to go. I can't believe I made it through the show. I'm going to cough again, so I got to hurry up and do this. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life and at Real Science Radio, which you should go check out. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.